Except for brief sojourns abroad, I've worked all my life in Cork. I had my first short story published in New Irish Writing when I was 19. I had my first poems published in Poetry and Review when I was 20. At that age, I had no option to be published in Cork because there were no literary magazines in Cork. Poetry Ireland had been founded in Cork in 1948, ceased publication in the mid-50s, and until I found the journal Steeple in the early 90s, between that 40 years, there were no literary journals in Cork. Now you might ask, why, so what, you know? My argument is that a major city needs a literary journal the way it needs an art gallery. It isn't good enough for us to need to be at the behest and whimsy of people in Belfast or Dublin to see our poems being published, our first poems anyway. You know, as you grow as a writer, you want to see your work published everywhere. But it's important to have some local support and local organisation. I did four issues of the Steeple before it folded due to my exhaustion, both physically, mentally and financially. It's extremely difficult to sustain a literary journal without an organisation behind it. We had another marvellous event last Friday when we had a new arts and literary journal launched in Cork, Penny Dreadful. I wish it all the best of luck. I hope all the future issues will be produced out in Cork. There were two issues of Southward produced before I became artistic director. I think they were published 12 months apart. When I became artistic director, was my determination that Southward would come out regularly, at least twice a year. We did a rehash of the cover design so that it had a uniform look each issue. At a certain point, I decided that it was better to make Southward exclusively an online publication. If you go into Waterstones today, you won't find any copies of Poetry Ireland Review or Stinging Fly. Likewise, when we were doing print editions of Southward, we had a distribution figure of about 200 copies, and we were spending €2,500 printing each issue. It just wasn't economically feasible. I prefer to see money go to writers than go to printers. And in fact, through Southward every year, whether it's through judges' fees, editors' fees, competition award money, money paid for poems or short stories, we pay out €16,000 every year to writers through Southward. And not a year goes by without somebody in the Arts Council dropping the hint to me, do we really need to do Southward? Southward is not a priority for the people in Dublin, but having a literary journal in the South is a priority to us. I couldn't have brought it online without the commitment and intelligence of Jennifer Matthews. Jennifer had started this when I decided that I needed to bring it online, and without having very few HTML programming skills when I hired her, right from the running start, she acquired all the skills necessary to move Southward from a print journal to a web journal. With the typesetting and proofreading, copy editing of it ever since. But my job as managing director is more like a traffic cop. I choose who the editors are, decide what books are reviewed, but generally other people do the work and I just direct them as to where to go. So I'm going to start by reading a poem by an American poet who's published this issue, named Eric Paul Schaefer. He lives in Hawaii. He works as a teacher creative writing to graduate level, and and the poem in question is called Hoku Grades My Students' Papers. A crinkle and a tatter of paper as she gyres through pages is her joy in this assignment. Metaphors don't move her, nor does fancy font on a perfumed pink page. She rolls on her back among poems, a wriggle of ecstasy sparked by sun on her upturned belly. its fall, classes are begun, and windows that don't admit the summer sun are open to morning light, slanting across the table, and the words my students offer the world. Hoku sniffs the tidy edges of blurred sheets, creasing pages as she rubs herself chin to chest over the lines. When the branches outside move, she leaps and spits at the shadows of leaves, and a rasp of paper is the only voice Hoku hears in her ruminations. And Emily's light verse and Stephen's lax adjectival ode to his own broken heart. Before I stop her, Hoku slashes a villanelle about chickens, and another bishop spawned Sestina on grandmothers. But I'm the one who rips into the first page of an odd homage to Ginsburg's Howl, as I pull the paper from beneath her manic, green-eyed symposium. Her circles as she chases her tail over the sun-warmed table are comic, when our little literature flies in all directions. But soon she's asleep in a litter of verse and scattered leaves. Beneath her chin, she's bent one corner of a page as perfectly as a reader who wishes to remember where to begin again.
So we've got six poets from the current issue that are based in Cork or surrounding areas like Kerry, and they each have two poems for each tonight. So first up, please welcome Cal Doyle.
I'm writing you from the snow, spoon-fed upon the drum of the snow's glare, and my prayers to pagan idols, the door, and the knife, the door, and bottles of beer and whiskey, long empty, glass keyboard, frozen to my memory. The air here thins by the hour, as I freeze into an element, unknown to science, alien to kinesis. A bear stalks the cabin at night. My insomnia watches her, watching me. It hears her footfall, her snorts, her elliptic geography, and her hunger growing. I'm really interested in the internet. I'm not sure what I can say, but it's amazing. Apples. You ease onto your belly without breaking rhythm or stride, as I feign and fumble with my fear of being captured midair, undressed, erect, halfway across the continent I've never even visited, copied and released onto some half-assed DVD on a rug down some alley, and receive none of the plaudits that your performance is surely worthy. And it is. Your back alone usually stirs me into the frenzy. The end game, where you are now without me. You said when you started that you wanted me to feel like a man, and I do. I feel like a man trapped outside a woman's body. And nights move away from real intimacy. But as you arrive, my stream falters. Your whole being stops, fragments, and reconfigures slowly. An anti-bloom of bed, flesh, and wallpaper across my monitor, reassembled, decompressed, and illuminated by the subtle magnetism of the screen. Your eyes sync up with mine, and we become who we are, two lovers watching one another through eyes from opposite ends of the earth.
Welcome, Africk McGlinchey.
we wander. We disappear where the heat is wet and the light is green, and peacock bass fly in the air like a fishbowl caught in the sun. Listen to the warrior river, high whoops and the throaty calls of cockatoos, macaws, who cut the air with a whoosh, as tall leaves shimmer, and a baby monkey, hidden in a tree crutch, cries for its mama, who picks it up, and a python ivy stalks the frogs, eyes chimpanzees, and we slice our melons with machetes, shoot pips from our mouths, and we wonder where the jaguars are, and the monarchs throng, and the white sun starts its drowse, and we look up, up to the trees. And this one's called Under the Canopy of Music. You lift your hands as you dance, holding the air like a partner. You sway and flow, the music kindling to your soul. Velvet orange curtains offer privacy, but joy leaks through the window. And you let it happen, give yourself, and you are fine, leaving all your mistakes behind. And your red skirt flares into the sound that flings all sadness aside, the white lies slipping from your body as you dance through all the breakages, all the long nights.
Next up, please welcome Donal O'Driscoll.
Woohoo!
Connolly contented. James Connolly watches from over my bed. His pastel-coloured face looks contented. As I look up at him, I wonder why. What did he have to be so contented about? He who lived in abject poverty, suffered terrible loss, and died tied to a chair. He told us once that to change the flag that flies over Dublin Castle would not change anything. Now, as I watch the news about bailouts and austerity, I realise why he smiles on me. He's contented because he was right.
Yeah.
Woohoo! Very appropriate. I have to do a small bit of singing for this next one, so I apologise in advance. Your fingers tap frantically. After the ball is over, you sing with closed eyes. Just at the break of dawn, your tapping continues, entrancing me as I sit beside you, eating bread and butter sandwiches, wishing that you could stay.
Thanks very much, Donal. Next up, we have John W. Sexton.
This first one appeared in Southwood 17, Frog. Peeled free of my body and unfolded over the hillside, my skin would cover 3 acres, for I am the shining grass of morning, compressed in a croaking knot. The river I swim through is merely the dream of the red, slimy river of my gut. I hold the world inside my mouth, riveting to get out. My throat chokes the world back to its place. I am the slippery jewel that God coughed up when time began. I'm the soft cog of the flesh clock, the green spring for winding the universe down in. In the heron's beak, I am the omega of swallowed things. This is in the current issue. This is a sequence of minimalist poems, a mix of Gendai haiku and sci-fi-ku. It's great that Thomas McCarthy sees something like this and he doesn't go, what a heap of shite, which is what a lot of poetry editors do. I love this journal, by the way. No plumosery to Pat or to Jennifer. I fucking love Southwood. Room 6. Dankness of cooked cabbage seeps into our minds. Evil are the small things. So light on the water, Charon is held up by his own reflection. An angel composed of solid sound, we bleed from heaven's message. Sliced in two by a rainbow, grandpa's meadow and cows drift thenwards. Washing their hair in iron, the fire maidens forge a starry knot. A secret door squeezes shut. The hippos shake the mud hole from their hides. The I told you so tower. A lift stops at the umpteenth floor. Crank your bitterness engines, witch. Light of a thousand, thousand lemons. Room 4. Dentures of the Jews. Room 5. Their shoes. Room 6. Their condensed steam.
Thanks so much, John. Next up, please welcome Michael Sheen.
Thanks, Jennifer. Chateau Auger from Matthew Sweeney. As your glowering, long-haired face, younger, darker than your current self, seeped out from the back flyleaf of your latest book, Black Moon, it reminded me of half a dozen evenings listening to you in an upstairs room in Douglas Street discussing Baudelaire's L'Âme de Vin from his Fleur de Mal, and of the Monday afternoon when I saw you slip into a bookies, looking no doubt for the odds on some risque bet, demanding payment in cases of Chateau Auger. The second one, was inspired by a recent visit to the Crawford Gallery. There's a fantastic exhibition on there at the moment. Backstreet Print Shop, on viewing the photograph Man Sleeping by Paul Seawright. It's 2:30 in the afternoon and he's asleep on a bench in this back street print shop, his elbow resting against the scuffed wall. The offset press is pushed to the opposite wall, its metal barrels are clean, all the other paraphernalia of printing stand by, a red oil can, a repurposed 7-Up bottle, a white bucket now black with a skin of exhausted ink. Here and there on the floor are scraps of paper with their misaligned print discarded. Above his head, the only window is high on the wall, out of reach even at full stretch, and in the doorway hangs a metal grid gate, much like a police holding cell. In the midst of all this, my eye is drawn to reams of pristine virgin white paper stacked on a table inside the door, and the palm of his hand, so clean, cupped toward the camera. Thanks.
Thank Finally, can we please welcome Rosalind Blue, who's just launched a collection she'll be reading from in the Country Centre.
I would like to say also that it's a big pleasure to be kind of re-invited into Southward when I did my work experience with the Munster Literature Centre back under Paddy Gilvin and Mary Johnson. Southward was the first to publish a few of my poems ever in Ireland, so it's kind of like a birthplace for me here, and it's nice to be included again. So this is the hobo. Anybody got a cup? Right, there's a cup on the floor, right?
I am the homeless man of the city. I sit by the shop fronts on the street. The cup before me fills less by the day. And I can clearly hear you say, I need my funds for my family. Yes, times are tough, but I can see you still have more than what I need. I'm a hobo in the city streets. I'm one of the begging bums of the town. Lost my house in the Tigers crash. Then I got ill, but no welfare for me. I'd love to work and have a home still, with shower, my bed and a kitchen, and every day a good healthy meal. But like many others, I'm living rough, as Europe's demands get ever more tough. At night I sleep on a cardboard plane, or hidden under it in the rain. My shelter, the entrance of a bank. From that golden hole in the wall, I see people draw out millions of notes. Yet my cup's fill is ever so small, and you bail out the banksters for sure. I'm just a hobo on the city streets. My coat is ragged and brown from dirt. I reek my stink against the wind. The crowds avoid to pass me closely, and no one speaks a gentle word. But I can clearly hear you think, clean yourself up and go find work. Yet no one invites me in for a shower. There is no job for the hobos in town. So I'm one of the filthy bums of the city. My skin is weathered, red and rough from winds and rain, and itchy from the dirt and dust of the streets and the cheap grub that I eat. The soup kitchen's queue is longer today. I'm hungry, so I join in with shame, a hobo on the sticky streets of the city. Cold in the drizzle, clammy my clothes, my sleeping bag is left my lonely home, and only the booze keeps me warm. So my face is red and I can't walk straight. But I can clearly hear you think, it's your own fault, just stop the drink. Unaware that we die here without it. We're hobos on the streets of the city. We merely exist under politics' eyes, luckless losers of banksters' greed. And austerity will thrust more on the streets. We trusted in Europe and welcomed wealth. But the bubble burst from their lies and their stealth. So high were our hopes, our downfall so deep. And no one bails us out, homeless, at the street corners of so many towns.
I'm also going to have a reading in the White House on the 30th of January. I'm going to say next week, the week after. So I've been practicing a bit, and I wanted to do one second one, and because it fits so nicely with that topic, it's a translation from 1995. I wrote it in German, but it applies to everywhere, really.
The crunch. With a frosty grasp, the crunch clasps humanity. Money scrunches the free soul, squashed to ice, squared the humane mind. Time flows away and no one knows where it goes to waste. Cold hearts sever from love and suffer warmth withdrawal. With a frosty grasp, humanity clasps the crunch.